Welcome to Home But Not Alone with Tim and Sarah, where we talk about real life as a stay-at-home Catholic parent. If it's noon and you're still in your pajamas, have reheated your coffee 3 times and tried to pray but got distracted, this is the place for you. Life is crazy, but through it all, remember, you're never alone. You've got God's grace and our friendship coming your way.
Welcome back, everybody. Today on Home But Not Alone, we're from the lives of some pretty holy people. We're talking about saints, blesseds, and other holy people. Too often, we think of saints as people from hundreds or thousands of years ago, but even when we overcome that temptation, a lot of times we are still tempted to think of saints as people from somewhere else, the other side of the globe, you know, Mother Teresa, John Paul II, Blessed Carlo. So we're going to bring it close to home in this episode, and we're going to talk about American saints, blesseds, and other holy people from right where we are. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Sarah. So you had some sort of experience related to one of these people recently. Is that correct?
I do. I have an American saint story. So I wanted to tell you about my impulsive pilgrimage to the shrine of Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton. So she has a national shrine, you know, in her name in Maryland. It's like right over the border from Philadelphia. So we're sitting in Mass one Sunday, and our priest is giving his homily, and he goes, oh, and by the way, tomorrow is the feast day of Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton, you know, one of America's great saints, and we're taking a pilgrimage to the National Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton, and if anyone wants to go, you have less than 24 hours to make this happen. And I'm like, yeah, no, not going. It was like a 4-hour drive or something. This is not happening.
Hold on. When I worked in ministry, I had to book spaces on the campus like a year and a half out, and the priest is sitting there saying, so you got less than 24 hours. Oh man. Okay.
Yeah, you got less than 24 hours. You want to come on pilgrimage with me? And I'm like, man, you're crazy. But my kids, some reason, were listening to the homily. So my 6-year-old like grabs my face and was like, can we go? Are we going? Can we go on pilgrimage? And I was like, no, what are you, crazy? And then after Mass, my 9-year-old who serves the Mass was like, can we go? Mom, can we go on pilgrimage? And I was like, okay. Like, what Catholic parents' dream of your children begging you to go on pilgrimage? Like, when does this actually happen? And so I just couldn't say, like, how can I say no to the kids? Like, isn't this what I want? My children want to go on pilgrimage. They want to do Catholic stuff. And so I texted the priest later that day and I said, okay, listen, if you can find someone to carpool with us, because it was a 4-hour drive there and like 4 hours back, and we were going to do it all in one day. And that's a lot of driving. And by myself, in the car with all my kids. And so I said, if you can find someone to like carpool with me and share the driving, we'll go. I was kind of counting on him not being able to find someone to carpool with me again. But he was like, all right, I'm on it. And he texted me back a couple hours later and said, all right, I got someone to go with you. So we did it. Like, I just packed up a bunch of food for the kids. And we got in the car at, I don't know what time it was, like 6 o'clock the next morning or something. And we drove down to Maryland and visited the National Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton. And it was beautiful. So she has this basilica there, and they were doing like a Mass that was streaming on TV, but that's not the Mass we were going to because we were out of state. So they were doing a Mass that was streaming on TV, but after that one was done, like, we got to go in there, you know, just our little group, and then our priest said like a Latin Mass, and my son got to serve the Mass in the Basilica, which was like an amazing blessing and an honor for him. It was just absolutely beautiful. And then, you know, we drove home and we were all exhausted. And I know a little bit about Elizabeth Ann Seton, but I feel like, you know, you're the historian and you probably know more. So if you could maybe like tell us a little bit about her, that would be awesome.
You often call me the historian. I got a history degree. That, you know, that's...
That makes you a historian.
It doesn't make me anything, I'll tell you what.
I got a math degree. I'm a mathematician. I'm calling myself a mathematician.
You've actually published math-related stuff. I have...
True.
Yeah, I got nothing. I mean, there's a few standards that a lot of people know about her. Like, she was a widow and then a founder of the Daughters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul. or the Sisters of Charity in Cincinnati. And, you know, like there's a whole bunch of different charity related groups that she founded, which is awesome. And
they're like a teaching charism, right?
I have no idea.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the Sisters of Charity was like a teaching charism. So they were like the school nuns.
Okay, you know? That makes sense.
Like the school teacher nuns. That, because she was the Catholic school
lady, school
lady.
Yeah, she was the school teacher lady. Okay, so that does make sense. Yes, because that was what, yeah. I always thought of her as the teacher growing up, whether or not she, you know, I don't know what she ever did in that realm other than found all of these things. But so, yeah, apparently, so this is actually the one thing I did find about her that I found most interesting is not as much about her. So there's St. Francis Xavier Cabrini in 1909 became a U.S. citizen, even though she was born in Italy. OK, so here's the thing. I've been hearing for years, Elizabeth Ann Seton, first American saint. Okay, no one ever clarified for me because I've heard this, all this, well, no, this person is, no, that person, all these sources. St. Elizabeth Ann Seton is the first American-born saint. She was born in the United States, and she was then canonized in 1975. But, like, St. Francis Xavier Cabrini became a U.S. citizen, but she was canonized earlier than Elizabeth Ann Seton. So that's, you know...
Okay, so she was the first canonized, but St. Elizabeth Ann Seton was the first one born in the United States. That's cool. That makes sense. And we got to see, we actually went into the cemetery that's right there at the shrine, and we saw like her original tombstone where she was originally buried. And then we saw the tombstones of, I think it was her two daughters. And it was really cool. Our priest brought like roses and stuff to put on the tombstones of her and her daughters. But she's not buried in the cemetery anymore now. She's in the basilica.
Okay.
So we got to go pray, you know, where her body remains and stuff. It was very cool.
That's really cool. So, so I broke these people up when I was doing this research into a few different categories. And the first category here is
you're breaking people up. You true Catholic.
I am. There we go. creating division, hostility. That's all. That's what.
No, I was thinking.
What are you thinking about?
I was thinking of like relics.
Oh, that's a far more literal than what I was thinking. I was thinking
literally breaking,
creating
up.
Division. And you're like, nah, let's chop them up. All right. Okay. No.
Okay. So you were breaking these saints up into what?
Into different categories. The first of which is people I had never heard of. And maybe some of you have heard of these people. And I'm going to butcher so many names today. So I apologize for that. The first one is Saint Anne Therese Guerin or something, also known as Mother Theodore. She was the founder of the Sisters of Providence of Saint Mary of the Woods. I have no idea what that means.
The heck is that?
I don't know. I know she was born in France. She died in Indiana. So she did a lot of her ministry over here. That's why she is on a list of American saints. She's not an American citizen saint, but she's an American saint. What I do know is that a couple of things. One, with the skills that she learned and developed over time in all of the like medical treatment and everything that she could do, all the meds she knew about, that one source actually said today she would be recognized as a pharmacist because she knew so much about that stuff and, you know, the chemistry behind things and whatever. And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool.
That's cool.
And she helped and cared for sick people in their homes. This I thought was interesting is that she's been buried in four different places at the St. Mary of the Woods. I guess that's a church somewhere. But in the congregation's original cemetery, then in the crypt below the Church of the Immaculate Conception. I don't know. And in that, and then in the congregation's current cemetery, I don't know. And then in a tomb beneath the floor of the church. So
once again, you said four different places and I'm imagining her being chopped up to be buried. This is not all at the
same time. No.
I can't get over the.
That was all. No, those are, she was moved and she was placed.
Consecutively. Okay. I get it.
She was placed at the altar of the Church of the Immaculate Conception prior to the services of her canonization. Okay. So
that's cool. I feel like that happens a lot. Like the saints get moved from where they were originally buried and put in a church.
They sure do. They sure do. Another guy real quick is this guy named Saint Pedro Kalinsad. I don't know. He was interesting. He was a lay person, and he was born in the Philippines, came over to Guam, which is a U.S. territory, counts as the United States. What's in front of me says, a Filipino Roman Catholic martyr who was killed at the age of 18 while doing missionary work in Guam in 1672. A plot to kill him and this other missionary who was the same age. It happened when someone circulated false accusations that he and another missionary were spreading poison through pouring water over people for baptism. Through the Catholic masses. So somebody started a rumor that he was poisoning people through that. So then a plot to kill him came up and they murdered him for, you know, what he was doing. So 18.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, 18 years old. You know, at 18 years old, I was, well, not a saint. Next one. Okay. So Saint Barbara Cope. I don't know. She was born in Germany, died in Hawaii. She was the supervisor of St. Joseph's Hospital in 1870. You know, she did a whole bunch of this stuff. But something I thought was interesting was that she and six of her sister Franciscans went to Honolulu, Hawaii to care for the lepers. They completely revamped the conditions of the place that was taking care of the patients. And they founded a home for... I think the children, or maybe it was just the daughters, I don't know, of the patients, of the people who are struggling with leprosy or what's now known as Hansen's disease. And so they fixed all that up because people were living in horrible conditions.
Right.
In 1895, she took over a boys' home that had been founded by Saint Damien of Molokai, who's
thinking when you mentioned Hawaii and the lepers that, you know, the first thought that came to my head was Damien of Molokai. So I was wondering, you know, if she had any connection, and what do you know she does?
All right. Next guy I've never heard of. St. John Nepomuk. Oh, gosh. Names are hard. last name Newman. But here's the thing. The guy's name is St. John Newman. And for the longest time, I'm like, oh, St. John Henry Newman. No, it's not. Those are two different guys. Okay, I didn't know that.
Oh, you know what? I think that this has caused me so much confusion in the past because I feel like I've heard people saying John Neumann.
That could be a better...
St. John Neumann. Yeah. So maybe that's how you pronounce this guy's name, and it's not people like weirdly pronouncing St. John Henry Newman. I'm like, why are you saying it like that? Because it's a different guy.
Yeah, no, that's probably right, because I found one source that was like, but in the United States, people pronounce it Newman. And I'm like, well, clearly that means we're saying it wrong. So that's... but there's actually a church or chapel or something... named after him in the St. Louis Archdiocese, because my wife Jess pointed out to me, she's like, yeah, remember when we went to that wedding, and in between the wedding, a bunch of us went to mass? That's named after him. And I'm like, oh, I totally didn't know that. So, not a lot of information about him. Okay. Next category of people is honorary citizens. So there's only one person in this category, but she deserves her own own category. St. Teresa of Calcutta. AKA
she does deserve her own category. Yeah. That's good.
AKA Mother Teresa is an honorary U.S. citizen. I may have
known that, but I also may not have known that. I don't know whether.
I don't know how she felt about it, because I do know. Oh, what's his name? There was the very famous evangelical pastor for many, many years. Oh, I'm blanking on his name. I can't believe it. This guy was like deemed America's pastor for like 50 years. Anyway, he went over and met her one time, and she made just a few moments to see him and said, oh, it's very nice to meet you. By the way, the people in the West are the most impoverished people in the world. I'm going to go back to the rich people, meaning the poor she was caring for in India. So I thought, yeah, no, she had a lot of heavy criticisms of Western culture.
Yeah.
And good for her. Good for her. Two quick things about her that you might not know. Albania's international airport is actually named after her.
Really? Yes.
And she once traveled through a war zone to rescue 37 children from the front lines.
She's
I know, right? And I'm like, wasn't she like 3.5 feet tall? Like, and she was still like,
holy
cow. You know, I don't know how tall she was, but she was a small woman of stature. But man, she was something.
Amazing.
All right. Next list is people born in the United States.
Okay.
All right. First one is Venerable Bishop Fulton Sheen.
He's all the rage
right now. I love his writing. He's a really good writer and speaker, and I am so grateful for the work that he did.
And his TV show, how cool
is
that?
Oh, man, that's...
With his writing on the chalkboard.
Oh, man, he was so good at that, and he didn't shy away from the truths of the Catholic faith, but he also presented things in ways that people could connect with. Even non-Catholics would watch his show and be like, oh, that's interesting. And it's funny because I'll watch some of his old stuff on YouTube and he'll tell a joke and people will laugh. And I'm like, oh man, that joke does not hold up. Like it was, I get why it was funny 50, 60, 70 years ago, whatever it was, is not, no one's going to laugh at it today, but it's still a good joke, whatever it was. It fit.
Well, this is going to be our podcast in 50 years anyways. If somebody listens back to it, you and I are going to be cracking up and people are going to be like, that's
it's going to be our podcast next year.
Stop talking. Well, I mean, our podcast is not going to be Fulton Sheen.
No, the way we're laughing at things. I'm saying all of our jokes will be outdated by next year. That's what will happen.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. So he's really cool. Next guy on the list is Blessed Michael Joseph McGivney.
Oh, I have something to tell
you. Yes, go for it.
I'm related to him.
That's really cool. That
is pretty cool. I don't know how, and I don't know the details, but I was just looking it up in my grandfather. So my dad's dad, his name is James Fox Hanrahan. And I just read it in looking back at his obituary, that some of the early influences in his life, among them are Father McGivney, who's the founder of the Knights of Columbus, and he's a relative of my grandfather somehow. I don't know exactly how, so I'm gonna have to look this up. There's a couple people in my family who are like really into that family tree kind of stuff, so I'm gonna have to look this up and see if I can find some sort of resource or a link or something, and maybe I can put that out on our social media or something, just because I think it's cool.
Yeah,
like I'm related to a blessed
that is really
who
cool.
could someday be a saint.
That is really cool. That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. You know, whereas for me, I just know that he's the guy who I watched a documentary about last year where some priest was like, yeah, he lived when people really, you know, when people in the United States really were, you know, thought Catholics were the worst and that the, you know, Catholics were ruining everything and they were the this and the that and the blah, blah, blah. And he described that. And he's like, yeah, you know, back then. And I was like, I've had three different people say that stuff to me on social media in the last few months. What do you mean back then? Like, that's not, oh, I've literally had pastors message me to tell me things. And I'm like, stop bugging me. Leave me alone. Like, I'm not going to. Anyway.
The more things change, the more.
Oh, so true. All right. So another guy who I think this guy's awesome. I just learned about him a few years ago. Venerable Augustus Tolton.
I feel like I've seen that name pop up a lot recently.
Yes,
too.
So he is a runaway slave who eventually became a priest, and he really struggled because a lot of seminaries did not want to take an African American who was applying because this guy was, I think it was, he was born in, you know, Missouri, and he was, you know, Missouri at the time was a slave state. And so it was really difficult to be like, oh, we're going to take in someone who is and we're in a state that has legalized slavery. And so it was an incredibly challenging time for everybody. And this poor man, I've read part of his autobiography. I need to finish it, but or not autobiography, his biography. But he is just a fascinating man. And he is the example of how people can overcome anything if they lean on God. And the fact that, I mean, this guy was angry about things, the way he was treated sometimes by people in the church, often by people in society. He was angry about it. And you know what? I don't blame him. He should have been angry. So it's nice to see that, like, this is a real human man. Like, and so.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of times we paint saints in a light where they're just kind of You know, they're like a holy card.
Yes.
They don't move. They're perfect. They're two-dimensional. So that's good, like, to get the realness of some of these people, especially, like you're saying, in that biography. Yeah. Like, we're angry about the issues. Like, that's a good thing.
You can,
so
absolutely.
Cool.
As
really
long
cool.
as it's not something that we then use it to create harm or we use it to whatever, like, there is,
right.
It's okay. There are things that are upsetting. But yeah, this guy has the potential to be the first African-American the first American-born African-American to be canonized. So he has the potential for that. And he's actually, he was born less than 3 hours away from where I live. So I don't
cool.
know.
Personal connection.
Well, I mean, geographic, but sure.
Yeah.
It's not like he's my relative from the 1800s, like, you know, whatever. Actually, that's funny because he was born only 2 years after Father McGivney and died only 7 years after him. So, anyway, next guy we have Blessed Bernard Casey. Now, I don't know a ton about this guy, but I do know that he desperately...
Is this the same person as Solanus Casey? Sorry to interrupt you.
That is perfectly fine. Yes, that is the same man. It is.
Where does that name come from then? Why the two different names, do you know?
Solanus, I read this at some point. It was, I want to say, a nickname, or it was a name given to him by his fellow brothers or fellow priests, excuse me. Hmm. I can't remember why. It was something that he adopted when joining the Franciscan Capuchins, I believe. I think that's what it was, is that at some point that became, but for some reason.
I think you say it Capuchin, but I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know.
I think Capuchin is a
I told you I'm going to butcher things this entire time. I just didn't know it was going to be that. Capuchin, Capuchin, Augustine, Augustine. Let's move
on.
For the record, it is Augustine, not Augustine. Well, anyway, but that's, you know, it's another one.
Okay.
It is. Anyway. he was the sixth of 16 children.
You say that like it's no big deal. You just said 16
I know,
children.
But I'm saying, like, that's a noteworthy fact about this guy.
That's
amazing.
Can you imagine having 16 children?
I can barely imagine having the ones I have right now.
Okay, tell me more
about
this guy.
I know he struggled greatly academically, and so seminaries did not want to admit him or ordain him. And eventually he was ordained, and I can't remember what the phrase is, but basically it was like, hey, you get to be a priest, but we're not going to let you do, like, sacrament stuff, which is kind of mind-blowing that was the thing. And I don't remember how his whole story goes, but he was essentially the guy who opened the door for people at wherever it was that he lived and served. And it got to the point where he became so beloved by so many people for just his basic day-to-day service and his love of God and his kindness. His funeral was attended by 20,000 people. Like, this is a man where most people were like, yeah, this guy's never going to make anything of himself. Okay, fine. We'll let him open the door. But he took that simple job and he turned it into a way of really bringing God's love to people.
Wow.
And there's a quote I have of his. This is the first time I've ever found a quote from this guy. And it says, "We must be faithful to the present moment or we will frustrate the plan of God for our lives." And I need to hear that more often. That's, you know, or as Daniel Tiger would say, enjoy the wow that's happening now. It's the same thing.
I think Blessed Solanus Casey said it much more
eloquently.
I don't know. Yes.
Oh, much more so. All right.
All right. I want to fit one more in before we got to go.
All right. So this is one that she was canonized just a few years ago. Saint Kateri Tekakwitha. So, and I know I'm pronouncing that correctly because a friend of mine has her as her confirmation saint. So, Saint Kateri, she was a Native American, and she was, she was a lay person, you know, born in New York and eventually ended up in Quebec or however you want to pronounce it in Canada. And her last name, Tekakwitha, actually means she who bumps into things, which on one hand, it's like, why? Well, then I kept looking into it, and it was because St. Kateri, her whole family passed away from an outbreak of smallpox when she was around 4 years old. She lived in the the second half of the 1600s. And so, yeah, her whole family died of smallpox, but she survived the disease. However, it left her face scarred and she had impaired eyesight. And so it was because of this damaged vision that she was called Tekakwitha, which I thought, oh, that's interesting. I mean,
that is interesting because, like, when we think of, like, of a name, Kateri Tekakwitha, I would probably automatically assume that that's her last name because, like, that's how names
are
these days.
Yeah, but not necessarily 500 years ago with Native Americans.
Right, with the Native Americans. Yeah, so that's, I think it's good to know and helps us understand more of who these saints are. So that's awesome.
Let me give you one more saint real quick. And it's just because this one's close to my heart. Saint Rose Philippine Duchenne. Was from France and she really wanted to come over and serve in what wasn't yet the United States, or maybe it was around the time we became a country. And she ended up serving most of her life about 30 minutes from where I live. So her shrine, just like how you got to go visit the shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton, just over a year ago or a little less than a year ago, right when the pandemic was starting to, you know, whatever, appear or rage or whatever, we went there and my family, and we got to visit it. And it didn't take us, you know, hours in a car to go to Maryland. I thought, you know, of all the things in the world, you and I happen to both live within driving distance of where a canonized saint is buried. And I thought, you know, that's amazing. And that tells me, okay, there are enough saints in the United States who came here from other places, right, who were born here, who eventually became citizens, whatever it may be, most people in the States or in Canada or in Mexico, wherever in North America, there's going to be saints within a reasonable distance and, you know, might make pilgrimages possible that you don't have to go to the Holy Land for a pilgrimage. So.
Yeah. So if you have an American saint shrine near you, or, I mean, I guess any shrine, pilgrimages, it was so peaceful going, even though it was a crazy hectic day. Like, it's hard to explain how in all the crazy, like, all right, everybody get up, we're going to pilgrimage in less than 24 hours. There's so much peace to going on pilgrimage. So, hey, check out some of these saints. And if you have a shrine near you, I'd totally recommend going on pilgrimage and, you know, connecting with some of these American saints who are close to our hearts and just, you know, close to us and talk to them, pray to them, ask them to pray for you, and get some of those graces.
All right, so we want to thank everybody for listening today. Please do us a favor and subscribe to this podcast. Share it with people. We'd really appreciate it. Sarah, where can people find you?
My website is tojesusandsurly.com, and I'm on social media at tojesusandsurly.
And you can find me at chastelove.org or on Facebook and Instagram at thechastelove. Now, in the words of Scott Hahn, for every father must discipline his children, and paternal discipline is itself a mercy, a fatherly expression of love. And remember, you're never alone.